The core of media and commerce from now on is going to be curated news and information with social media as the source material for comprehensive reporting or journalism.
That's Dr. Barbara Iverson, journalism professor at Columbia College Chicago. That provocative statement set the tone for her presentation to the Chicago Headline Club on May 14th for a talk entitled Social Media for Journalists. We've edited our recording of the program slightly for continuity and time considerations, but here now is Dr. Iverson's presentation. We hope you enjoy it.
I'm a midlife journalist, so I had worked always with computing and the internet. I started with punch cards, and even before the web, I was interested in internet, but more not as a computer programmer, more as I was, you know, in education and like how people use this, how it will change communication. So the journalism department at Columbia asked me to come into journalism, and I've subsequently written for magazines and things. So, but I'm more like my students. I'm kind of a novice journalist. But I think it's critical for democracy that reporters and journalism step up now and really engage in the conversation going on the internet. I have some blogs and microblogs. I'm Dr. Barb on Twitter, so if you're going to sign up for Twitter today, if you didn't have it, you can follow me and see what that's like. All right, some things that I'll talk about or words that I'll mention that I want to make sure we're all clear on. Everybody knows what SMS is, right? That's just like short message system. And that's basically what you call those 140 or so characters that started out on cell phones and, you know, started out from texting. But that's the same as text. But sometimes, you know, I might say SMS, sometimes you say Twitter. It just means a short message. Now, when you're Twittering, you can put an at sign in somebody's name. So if you put at Dr. Barb, you would be like replying to me. And I'll see that Twitter, and other people will see it, and they'll know that you were talking to me in the public kind of a setting. All right, so there's another thing. If you saw something that I wrote on Twitter, or if you see something that someone wrote on Twitter, and you want to just talk to them, you don't want the world to see, you would use DM, direct message. Now, when you set up your own Twitter account, you can look through the preferences and you can ask that your DM messages get sent to your email if you still use email. I use email a lot that's more of my filing cabinet. I was thinking about it, I was laughing, because to me, email is like paper now. If I want something on paper, I put it in my email, and then otherwise it's out there. But DM in the name, and that'll be a direct message to the person. And you may have seen RT in front of a name. RT is retweet. So when Monroe has a really good thing on Facebook and I really like a post there, then a lot of times I'll go on Twitter and I might, you know, retweet, or, well, I guess if it's on Facebook, but, you know, RT, so you retweet something else. And that, we'll talk about that a little bit later, because sometimes that retweeting is problematic for us as journalists when we're trying to establish verify something, because somebody put a message out there, and if it's been retweeted thousands and thousands of times, we want to go back and say, like, did this person really, you know, get married, or did they really die, or did this really happen? And all of those retweets can get in the way. Generally speaking, the messages, any Twitter message has a message sender on it, so you can find out where it came from. Now, that might say Little Sally Sue. It's not guaranteed to say, you know, Sally B. Jones, but it'll tell you where the message came from. It has a timestamp, and that's good because sometimes we want to go back and look at something historically, and the Smithsonian is now collecting all of the Twitters, all of the public Twitters, and that they don't have them available yet, but coming in the future, we'll be able to go back and see historic Twitters, like what did Obama first Twitter when he was elected? What was the very first Twitter? And so for any kind of public event, you know, we'll be able to use that. So the timestamp is important. Okay. So now we'll consider why people use social networking. They form groups around interest, opportunity, propinquity. All that electronic and digital media do is lower the barriers to entry and participation in this conversation and getting connected. And if you look at this from a sociological perspective, people have two kinds of connections. They have close connections and they have loose connections. So our close connections are people we're intimately and, you know, emotionally involved with. And what social media lets us do is, I guess we could use it for those purposes. It's not really so satisfying, but it lets us have a much larger loose net of people. And that, you know, is very useful. A really important thing is down at the bottom here, FOAF, friend of a friend. If you think about that in social networking, you'll really kind of get what social networking is about. Because networks are robust, and they connect, you know, they connect, and they're very, like if a network breaks in part, you can route around that. So that's why we like networks. We talked about the geolocation. And the friend of a friend is important because if I don't know something and I know you, I can say, well, gee, do you know anyone who works at Sears? I mean, so in a simple example, and by asking other people, I can get help. But that you'll, you know, computer theorizers and the computer programmers think of that friend of a friend and all the social networking they're doing, they're thinking, how can we leverage this friend of a friend situation? So Facebook calls people being networked a social graph. Now, I don't think they necessarily mean a graph in the sense of like a bar chart, but they mean if you think about your connections to people, it's a social graph, and it's just how you map onto other people. Do you have a lot of friends or no friends? Are you often a node that's rich with, you know, whatever? And these are the things regular old people are saying. My friends on Facebook count on me to share interesting things. 58% of the people, and I think there's something like 600 million people on Facebook, think that, you know, over half of them think that they're putting things on Facebook because they want to share it with their friends, to interesting things. Now, I would say as a professional whose job is getting interesting things out to people, you have to have control of Facebook and things. You have to understand it because you have to be better than just, you know, the average person. 47% of the people say, my followers on Twitter read my tweets and retweets for information. So again, when you're thinking about having a Twitter and what you're going to tweet about, maybe you would want to have two accounts. You might have a private one and you might have a business one, and you want to keep the tweets that you're using for your professional reporter thing, tweet links, tweet interesting things, you know, not like, oh, I just finished a great banana split. And people are engaged in social curation, and I bet you all of you have seen an article recently about journalists and curation, right? I know as an educator, it's like every day I read something that says, journalism is curation. You must teach your students how to curate news and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's based on if everybody in the world is curating, they're doing content publishing, they're doing linking, retweeting, as part of their digital identity as amateurs, just as people, we as news professionals need to be thinking about that, incorporating that. All right, I talked about the friend of a friend idea. Behind this whole thing is this idea of a gift economy, where you give something away so that you will gain stature, respect, reputation, trust. Basically, you'll gain the attention, positive attention, of some other group. So what is social networking about? You're giving something away, and in return, you're getting attention. What does that attention do? By sharing, in effect, you're entering this economy. So you're sharing something valuable. What you're getting back in the form of attention is currency. All right? It's not a greenback, but any of you that are doing this, you know it's currency, because time and attention are bankable these days. Attention from your readers, from viewers, from other journalists, it could even be from people that are going to send you leads. So that's sort of behind all that. Now this one, you'll laugh, Monroe, because you see yourself in there. This is just a visualization of my social graph on Facebook. And I did this before I knew you were coming, but you have a lot of Facebook things. I got the governor in my social network. I got Jan Schakowsky. I got my brother-in-law. These are fun to do. You can try this sometime if you want when you have with your Facebook. I don't know, some, you know, the pictures, I think it's supposed to tell you who was more active, but people on Facebook become active and you know, then lull back. But the point to remember is there's more than 600 million active users of Facebook. Each one of them is connected on average to 130 other people. So you can see for each of these little lines, I mean, they can't even really be drawn in good scale, but that's a lot of people I can go to for ideas, I can go to for verification, I can go to for any number of things. And by knowing some of them, you know, I can find, you know, really esoteric connections. This is a similar thing. You can do this for Twitter. You can have your Twitter network visualization. And again, each of these, then there's more networks. So the friend of a friend idea connects you so widely. Yes?
Do you personally like choose who you want to see in your news feed, both on Twitter and on Facebook?
What I do on Facebook is I have a page for Chicago Talks, which is my publication. And that one, I follow the news feed more carefully. The other news feed, it could be anything from my husband's cousin's child who has taken to, you know, interacting with our family. Like, we don't even really, I mean, I guess I saw this guy when he was a baby, but he likes to hear about the family. My children, Monroe. So I don't know. To me, my Facebook is just kind of a fun thing, like when I get a chance to use it. But my Chicago Talks would be more business. And we'll talk about, I think I have a thing in there where I talk about Facebook and how you can set up a page. Because that's a powerful thing. You as an individual can set up a page for yourself as a reporter or, you know, if you have a television show or a magazine, you can set up a page for a publication. And then when you go on Facebook, it gives you a little box and it'll say, do you want to be Barbara Iverson or do you want to be Chicago Talks? So I like that. That means when I get on Chicago Talks, people won't be confused, you know, that it's the social Barbara.
So those are two different Facebook identifications?
Yeah. Your Facebook. And a page is different. Like if you have a page, it's more like an organizational thing and you can't follow people. They can follow that because it's like a group, but it's not like a person. But it's kind of nice to keep the business out of the pleasure. But yeah, otherwise the Facebook feeds, I mean, they just, if you get too many friends, it's like, how can you you could spend your whole week and then just say, oh, now I got to start watching Facebook again. Yes. Yeah. Well, is the blog going to be like part of the official site or something? Or will it be your own blog? I mean, if you remember back in the days, like Eric Zorn, I used to be on...
blog on the newspaper side.
Yeah, because, I mean, Eric Zorn, you know, he wanted to have a blog, and for a long time he had his blog, but it couldn't be linked to the paper, and then he had a separate blog, and it could be linked to the paper, but it wasn't really part of the paper, and now, I mean, most of the reporters have their blogs as part of the official thing, so... Now, a blog...
Do you have any thoughts on which is a better way to reach people?
We're going to get to that, so I'm going to hold off on that because we're going to talk a little bit about microblogging, which I think actually some of the microblogging applications might be better now, just because we don't write as long. I mean, a blog, it's almost like if you don't have another outlet, then I'd say have a blog and you can, you know, it's like your own little newspaper. Okay, so these things, trust, reputation, and social capital, that's what's behind social network. You trust your friends, they trust you. You can build or lose your reputation by how you treat those friends and how you supply information. You gain social capital and you use it like physical capital. So social capital is like, you know, do people trust me so I can go out and I can ask them to give me information? I can ask them to meet me somewhere. And that's the world of social networking. All right, this is just a little thing to establish my reputation with Twitter. Twitter started in March of 2006, and yes, Geek Barbara was on in August of 2006. Now, in August of 2006, how many people in Chicago do you think were on Twitter? One. And so it was really uninteresting because all of the tweets were things like, we're going to the valley to have Merlot tonight. And I'm like, gee, I don't know any of you. And I'm like, you know, thousands of miles from you. So Twitter initially, it was just like a small group of friends. And it wasn't useful until they got many, many, many more users. I think they really had their tipping point at South by Southwest 1 year when everybody started using it. And then once there were people in your area, and now it's pretty ubiquitous. But that's something to remember when you're setting up networks or somebody says, let's get on this program. Until you have a lot of other people using it, it could be the best thing in the world, but it's not going to be effective.
Yeah. Is there a way to check this? Because I don't remember when I joined.
Oh, it's whendidyoujointwitter.com.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So you can check yourself. All right, so what does all this mean for reporters and journalists? I mentioned the word curate. We're going to be looking at context. How can we use social network? How can we give our regular reporting, not, you know, do anything bad to it, but add to it? How can we organize? How can we report in this kind of fluid world of electronic 140 character messages? I think what we're going to do is we're going to enhance our old methods. Now, I think you need to think carefully about what it was like, and there might be some of you who don't remember this. There are some of you. But many of you remember when you went from a typewriter to using a computer keyboard. Maybe a few of you remember, but I remember. And, you know, you had to teach yourself a new way of writing. You had to sit down and say, am I going to give up, like, the legal pad and start typing on this computer thing? You know, am I going to give up a paper typewriter? Because there was like a learning curve involved. I'm glad I did, because I think if I hadn't, who still writes with it? Some people still write with a typewriter. But so that's the same kind of thing. It's not like you're going to radically change what you do, but you need to re-examine things that you're doing and find ways that you can get the social network in that's enhancing your work and maybe letting go of something else. So maybe it's, you know, the paper Rolodex goes. I don't know. I found this was real interesting. This started coming up, of course, after the Bin Laden Twitter and news event. And also, I mean, the thing was you had the royal wedding at the same time. So you had the happy news of the royal wedding and the, you know, serious news of Bin Laden. If we think back to Katrina, to several local disasters, we have this new kind of way that news breaks today. So again, I'm only talking about breaking news here, not necessarily other kinds of news. But the first stage is excitement. So you have people, I mean, I think one half of the United States, I believe like our median age is about 36. So in my mind, we have about one half of the people that are constantly connected to something, and the other half sometimes yes, sometimes no. But those people are, you know, they're on their devices. You see them everywhere, and they get a Twitter, or they see something on their Facebook, and they think it's news. Usually it comes through Twitter. It'll be a little thing, like with the Bin Laden. So there's an initial excitement, and it's really like a thrill of discovery. I'm sorry, my Skype is on, and you can see all my Skype friends. The thrill of discovery and being first. So then that's that thing of like everybody sees that Twitter and they want to retweet that right away, right? So journalists, I think this is a stage where you may not want to retweet it right away because you kind of go into uncertainty. And I mean, that's good. I think, you know, we're going to have this wider band of acceptability, but let's hope when somebody announces really bad or really odd news, you know, that we have gotten to Mars or something and it's fake, that it's not the mainstream and the journalistic community that's promoting that they've taken some time to check out this. So then there's the uncertainty, the doubters come. Some people are tweeting, you know, kind of like this might be true or I hear this or, you know, you're couching it. Others wait. Now, we got the search for validation. That's where journalists should be able to go, you know, a little head and shoulders above average people. I mean, one thing, the way I triangulated the Bin Laden thing was I got to it kind of late, and I saw, oh, well, the Sun-Times is saying it and the Tribune. So I was like, okay, chances are I don't have to search too much farther. If it had been just the Tribune, I don't know. Oh, that's a little joke. Okay, but basically you triangulate. And this would be where you could use your friends. If you've got a friend in Washington and something comes out of Washington, you DM them, direct message them, and ask if it's true. Or, again, this is where we have the great advantage over the young public especially. They won't think of picking up the phone and calling someone. So we as journalists, well, heck, I'll just call and see if that's true. But, you know, you're like 30-something that's on a train. He's just going to be, like, tweeting away, is this true? Is this true? So don't forget to use our good old techniques. When you get the confirmation, people are going to start searching for meaning. There's an interesting stage where the jokes come. I guess Gilbert Gottfried didn't think that was so interesting. Profits, I think that's an interesting thing. People will immediately start to make money, maybe like with a scam, like if it was Haiti, there'd already be a scam. Like, so that would be an interesting place to find news stories sometimes, and one of these breaking things is go in and look what's happening at that stage. At the action stage, you get things like Google pops a map up of the Bin Laden compound. Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, they'll start having action things, you know, come out to the to ground zero, or give money now. And then we go to the real analysis stage, and the truth is 140 characters is too short to analyze something. So there's where journalists will, you know, you may want to hang back a little. You don't want to deny. You don't want to be like the New York Times, which was claiming that the story of the Bin Laden thing broke when their guy put it on Twitter, which was like, you know, 2 hours or something after it was on the internet. But that's when the longer forms, you know, radio, television, newspapers can come in and do a good job. All right. And this is how I felt about the latest one with Bin Laden was pundits and TV news stations need to stop being surprised at the fact that people are using Facebook and Twitter. That's what they were designed for. I mean, that was just shocking to me that everybody was like, oh my God, let's analyze this. What happened? I mean, it's so obvious that people would start Twittering this, retwittering it. Would there be a lot of false information? Sure, but that's how news is going to break now. And so what we need to be doing is focusing on stories and the extra color that we can bring out of this. We need to figure out news ways to report not individuals necessarily that are Twittering, but how do we like interview the social media sphere? How do we, you know, interview a bunch of tweets? Interview in the sense of vet them and maybe put the best ones forward. You know, you can go, because the tweets are identified, you could go back and make sure someone is on Twitter. A young friend of mine, Craig Canale, who's working for Huffington now in New York, had this thing called Breaking Tweets. And he, in Iran, he painstakingly, right before their election, looked at who was Twittering, and he got a list of people that he established were not military shills, they were not shills of the government. You know, they were just regular people. And when in Tehran, when they started on election night and they closed down all the media, the BBC was calling him, the Guardian. In the middle of the night, I hear this kid, he's like a graduate student in Chicago, is the major supplier of news about that, because he had pre-vetted some Twitter people and had friends in this other part of the country who could still get news out. All right, now, this is a really important application that's brand new. Storify, storify.com. I would recommend you all check it out. The trouble with curating Twitters, does anybody look at what Andy Carvin was doing with the Egypt tweets around Tahrir Square? I mean, he was like a madman. He works for NPR, and he would get the tweets in, and he was tweeting about them. But, I mean, you imagine the guy, just like you would do on any, like, breaking news, all the guy's doing is, like, tweeting for hours. So what we need is some kind of mechanism to help us report those things. How do you publish a tweet? How do you show it to someone? I'm talking about this tweet. What would be the way? So these are two examples. This is one, my students did a story on TIFF, and to me that would be a story you curate, because Chicago and TIFF, it's like, you know, the never-ending story. So my idea is to have a story that can bring in a tweet, like there was some stuff about Rahm coming in and what he's going to do with TIFF, and the same site can also link back to the archive that the readers got about TIFF over, you know, the historical record. And the Daily Beast used Storify just to do the Spanish earthquake. So what they're doing is they're putting in writing, you know, their own writing, and then they can pull in these tweets. And what Storify does, I'm going to show you the back end of it, so you can see that a little. This is the program Storify. It has this part over here where I can say, find some Facebook things for me, find some Twitter things, find Flickr, find YouTube, Google Reader, RSS, this is links, find links. And when you look over here and you find them, then you can drag them over to this side and make them part of your story. You click on this and it puts up a text thing. So you write your text. I interviewed so-and-so and they said this, but, you know, the community says something else. And you could bring in the tweets from the community. And Storify brings them in as links. You don't have to link them. So it's like a work process.
This
Storify was in beta. It just came out of beta like 2 weeks ago. And it's for journalists to be able to write this new kind of story where you might have your traditional, however you're going to write it, or you could even put in a video story here or an audio story for radio. But it brings in the tweets and it brings in the links without you having to format them. Because if you're writing a regular story and you want to bring in a tweet, what do? You say, Joe Blow tweeted this. Do you make a little picture of it? This thing, it brings it right into the storyline.
It searches for it, or do you type in keywords?
You have this thing on the left where you search for what you want. Yeah, and you use keywords.
And it'll find tweets just based on the keywords.
And, well, in the setup, too, you can set it up. So if you have a list, like if you're following a list of people in Twitter, it'll go for that. But, yeah, you could put in a hashtag if you wanted to do a particular story. And it's brand new, and it's sort of out there. And right now the challenge is, like, you know, reporters, journalists, what are you going to do with it? And then you can publish the story to your own whatever. You know, you can publish it to a blog if you're where you're working. If they have a way that you can put in a password in that, you can publish it right into a content management system. I'd imagine that the best of the Storify things, they'll start syndicating them or you know, talking to people. But it's brand new, and it was a little bit confusing for me at first. But when I realized that you just click over here and these text boxes open up, then I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool resource. So Storify is to form or tell stories of, to narrate. So it's a free software. And these are some of the stories that are out there. I mean, Botox Mom, that looks like it's probably one that, I don't know who's doing that. A mother has defended injecting her 8-year-old daughter with Botox. When you publish a story, so let's say you finished a story, then I think it'll tweet out that you finished that story. Yeah, when you finish the story, it'll say, do you want to tweet that you finished the story? And it'll tweet the link to where you've published the story. So, you know, you could use that in any number of ways. So it's what this is, it's a work process tool. That's what it is. It's a process tool.
That's the part that's confusing me. It's a work process tool, but you're saying publish the story, that it does it. I mean, it's not really a story in the end. Its end product is a list of important stuff that you've asked it to go and look for, right?
It could be that. It could be a story. You could write a story and you could interview 3 people and then you could have Twitters. Maybe you have like a, you know, maybe there was like a police, the police beat people up at a demonstration. So you would have the typical kind of interviews, but what you would be able to do with Storify is stick the Twitters in there or stick links to, you know, historical escapades where the police had beat people.
Essentially, it's just using the tweets as quotes.
Yes, but it's bringing them in a form that you know, and it'll bring in links, all of those things. That's what I haven't seen before, because before when we wanted to use those, how did you actually bring them together and present them? Document Cloud, I think, is like you put documents on there, right? And the document is, can you write on Document Cloud? Is it a word processor?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah. Document Cloud, I think, would be if I get access to a database like all the felons in a certain county or something, I can put that on Document Cloud. But I think I don't use this. Somebody use, Art, do you use Document Cloud?
No, I'm writing it down.
Oh, okay. Because I know when my students did the part of the story they did on TIFF, that we worked with a computer guy and made an interactive map of all the TIFF stuff, and I think our data was on Document Cloud. Yeah?
As soon as you start using this, is this available for public viewing?
No. No, you'll see that's the nice thing. There's a draft state where you keep it in draft. This is probably like what's confusing, the idea of publish. Because all publish means is make it go out on the web. So you could publish it and it would just be on Storify. You could publish it wherever, but you can also keep it as a draft. But published, I mean, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it just means like out on the web for other people to view. Yeah, it's on Flickr. So if you had your own photos, it's just a way of bringing your own photos from Flickr in there without having to copy paste them or download them to your desktop first and then upload them to another server. Yes?
When you're searching for tweets to augment the story, is it just going to search in your list of followers or people you're following, or will it just search the entire Twitter universe?
You have ways of setting it up. Let's see if I can. Okay, I'm logged in here. Create a story.
Actually doing this real time.
Yeah, so I just put ROM, Daily Dynasty, these are the different things that it brought up, retweets, Cool Mike. I think it just went into Twitter. Let's see. To tell you the truth, I mean, I just started using it myself, so I'm showing it to you because I think this is like a breakthrough application to me. I would imagine there'll be a whole bunch of Storify, copycats or whatever. There'll be other ways to do this, but this is the first one that I've seen that works without crashing, that really seems to make something that was arduous and you kind of wanted to do it, but you know, I mean, how would you go to someone and say, well, how do I publish this Twitter? And they'd say, I don't know. And what happens if you just take a screen grab of it and put it in your story? If you take a screen grab, then it doesn't get in the search engines, right? Because images are not in search engines. So it'll mess up your SEO, and I'm not talking about SEO like selling stories, but SEO also is how you get recognized and how your story gets found by interested people. So if you import it this way, the words in the tweet, the person in the tweet is part of your story, and you're in that search thing, yeah. I'm trying to look at where my settings are.
Is this a new company or is this associated with one of them?
It's a journalist who started this site for journalists because he believed they had it. So yeah, it's a new, I was using it, I've had it for like 6 months, but it was in beta. You had to ask to use it. So they had some people doing the beta and just, I mean, it was, because I didn't show it to my students because it's such a pain to get them to look at anything beta. But then it went public like 2 weeks ago, so I was like making my students look at it.
What does in beta mean?
In beta means like it's a soft launch. So they let some people use it. You had to kind of say who you were and how you were going to use it. And then
and then
they don't really, you know, they'll say like, oh, it might crash, you know, and if you lose all your work, you don't cry because you say, oh, I was a beta tester.
So you have, the only place you can write copy is on top of it, on the top part, and can you intersperse it in between?
Yeah, here, let's see, if I drag this over here. All right, so you see how I dragged these two tweets over here? These would be part of my story. This is my intro. Whoops. And then when you click over here, it opens up a text box. See? So this is what I'm saying. Ken, you could write, you know, 500 words here and just have a little bit. And I just searched for tweets here. So I'm thinking, we in Chicago could become the hotbed of Storify reporters, because I don't know that they're using it in other cities as much. And we could become, like, you know, the go-to people for Storify stories. So what would be great is if you try it, send me your links to Dr. Barb when you do that, and let me know how it's going, because I would love. I think we'll go on now. We can come back to this, but it's something you got to kind of play with it. Yeah. Oh, here, and see this user list? So I can have a user list. So this is searching my list in Twitter. I got this one, like, you know, my own Chicago Journals or Cool Kids or something. If I had favorites in Twitter, it would search my favorites. This is nice. It'll go through the timeline of the tweets. So if you had a story that, you know, where you wanted to do a chronological thing, and this is just my tweets. So I could, if I had been tweeting, I know there's some reporters go out on the campaign trail and you tweet all day because you don't have time to do anything else. You could go back and search your own tweets for what you've said about that. This was automatically sent from Storify. When I finished my story and I put it up there, I said, oh yeah, I'll tweet this out to people. And I made it say, help me get better. I mean, it was going to say, you know, it had a self-serving message, like Storify says to read Storify. Yeah, yeah. And then you would have, if you clicked on that, you would have seen this. So, see, this is me on Storify. So my story is published on Storify, and then I have not embedded it anywhere, but I could embed it in another thing. All right, so that's Storify. It's exciting. And again, it's experimental now, so if it doesn't work, you can tell the people what you liked about them. But another quote I found was, the core of media and commerce from now on is going to be curated news and information with social media as the source material for comprehensive reporting or journalism. And this tool, I think, just brings us, you know, we can start to say, oh, as a journalist, I can use this. Now I'm not just out there messing around. Okay. Here's what Andy Carvin, again, the NPR guy, he was talking about when he was in Egypt doing the Tahrir Square ones. It's somewhere between reporting, collaborative network journalism, I love that, and George Plimpton-like oral history. This was what he was doing, was just taking the tweets he was getting, and because he was near as he could be, he would just put out the best tweets and tweet on, you know, and say, like, this guy's good, look at this guy's pictures. I'm doing it in real time in 140 characters. I don't know what to call that, and I don't care as long as people don't waste my time trying to give it a name. And I don't know if you saw, like, the snarky tweet. Somebody snarky tweeted about poor Andy, and they said Andy was injured on Metra train. You know, he was injured covering Egypt on the Metra train, like he tripped on the stairs or something. So that's what, you know, that will happen to reporters in this day and age. All right. Now, another thing that you need to do if you're going to get excited about Storify and use tweeters and tweets, you have to be able to find among the 13,000 per minute or whatever. Maybe there's only 800 per minute. What, you know, sometimes there's fewer. You have to figure out how to make sense and find the good ones and identify them. And this is a kind of a neat thing, TwazUp, and sadly for the people involved in the accident, but happily for me, there was that Metra train accident when I was setting this up. So in TwazUp, I put Metra Chicago, and I did this yesterday when that Metra train had crashed. And it just goes among the different social media. Here's Steve Grzanich, so that would, you know, these are pretty much, most of these are like from NBC, they're not, you know, the middle part here are the traditional news organizations, and then over here are Twitters about it. So but it's like, Twas Up, I guess it's like, what's up on Twitter? Okay. Twas Up, T-W-A-Z-Z. These names are horrible. Yeah. Imagine as a teacher, I'm sitting, I'm worried my boss is going to walk by, and I'm telling the students, and robots and spiders will come to your website, and then we'll go to Twas Up, and then we'll tweet. So someday maybe they'll have better names, but Twas Up, like, what's, so it's real-time results that are coming from some story. So again, if we just put vaguely in there Chicago, we probably wouldn't get as good a thing. But this would be really helpful, I think, if you were doing a news desk kind of a thing and you heard there was an accident, at least you're getting some stuff out there. It might help you know where to send a reporter, et cetera. And again, you could use it to verify something. You know, we could have put in Bin Laden when we suspected that he was dead and see what, you know, what a majority of people are saying. And hopefully you might see them saying, it's not true or something, if it, you know, and you'll, yeah.
How is it different than just a search engine, Twitter? How is this different?
It's the real-time stuff, so it's going to bring them up. I mean, so it will bring up what's happening at the most recent ones. I mean, you could just search Twitter.
Is it better than Google? I mean, because Google a lot of times will have the tweets.
Oh, the real-time tweeting in Google, yes, yes. Well, I think you got to use more than one. But I like this because it brought up some that were highlights. It brought up the public tweeting in the news, and I haven't fooled with it too much. It just, you know, again, I like, when I was in social science school in my master's and that, they were always talking about triangulating. You know, and like when you do a data research study, you know, correlation is not causation. So you've got to find two or three kinds of evidence that point to something being true. So this would just be one source. But yeah, the Google real-time, you know, where you can go to not only search Google, but you can say, give me the real-time results of Twitter. That's another good one. And I love this one. Has anybody seen Twitter fall? Twitter fall, like they're falling down, and you'll see why it's called Twitter fall in a minute. All right, so this, I like this about Twitter fall. So they're actually falling. This is showing how many there are. Now, Twitter fall is like, if there weren't a lot of Twitters happening at this minute, it would be real boring and there wouldn't be anything. So this is really good to get a sense of how fast. Oh, I did a search for the Metro Chicago.
Oh, so this is still the Metro.
Yeah, this is still the Metro. So this is like the follow-up. What's nice about Twitter fall too, I did this search and I can save that link and I can go back to it. So I can, you know, I mean, the arc of the news story, it was when it was breaking, there were a certain number of tweets. These you'll see are the follow-ups. Oh, the guy had 50 tickets, blah, blah, blah. And it lets you go back and see how that story is developing in the social media. Here are the trending items. Yesterday, this was funny. Yesterday, Ashton Kutcher was in the trending items. And I didn't look at it, but today I read in the paper that he's now going to replace Charlie Sheen. So he was trending yesterday. If I was an entertainment reporter, I could have been on that story. I don't really care too much about Ashton. But this can show you, too, how the, you know, like if a story is losing popularity. Yeah?
I'm just curious. Is it just kind of a different way of...
This one shows me the speed. So I get a sense of, it, you know, like how often people are Twittering. Yeah, they're just different. They're not that different. This one, too, though, I can put my lists in. I can customize it for my Twitter list and just look at what they're talking about. I can do, like, a geolocation. And you could get story leads from these. I've used Twitter fall. Like, I was at home one time, and my Google Mail wasn't working. And I just had this really weird feeling that it wasn't just me. And so I got on Twitter fall, and I said, is Google Mail out just for me? And actually, people, like, were Twittering about it all over the world. And I found out, okay, it wasn't just broken in America. It was broken all over the world. These are 140-character limited messages. That's the whole point of Twitter. Twitter is limited to 140 characters because that accounts, like a text message that the phone can send is slightly more than 140. It's maybe 165 characters. So they said, all right, people are going to have their names in there and they're going to have the at sign. So we will limit the message in Twitter to 140 characters. I remember being at a news thing at Newsplex in like 2005 and having this person say, teach your students to write 124 character stories for the mobile phone and that will be a job. And I was like, what a joke. Who would want to write 124 character stories? And it's pretty much true now. So what you're seeing here, this one is going out to Metra, the UPW. This was another Metra message. This is Shady Boytel, but yeah. So that one got in there just because it was Metro. He's just saying he's there. And you could see what happens now because the emergency is over now, and I didn't do Metro accident. I searched for Metro. So now the second day I'm getting, you know, other things. We're on our way home. And you can go over, this one's got feature guide. It actually has a guide, questions, widgets, so you can check it out for yourself. But, I mean, these are just different tools, and they will vary how useful they are to you based on, you know, what kind of work you're doing at the time. But the Twitterfall one can be very exciting. If you embedded it on your site when some news is going down, like during an election time, you know, you're going to go to bed and the election's not settled, you could embed a Twitterfall widget for that ward race or something, and all night long on your site that, you know, the Twitters will be going, and it'll be like you're posting news all the time and you're not doing anything. So that could be useful. All right, I don't know, has anybody seen this thing called The Stream from Al Jazeera? All right, I think, you know, when we talk about how is news going to look in the future, this is a show, their newsroom is in Washington, it's really slick, it's like, you know, an Oprah kind of setting or whatever, they got couches, they got a lot of screens. This one here happens to be like a voice print. It was a woman talking about sex and prostitution in Kenya and being like a, you know, a slave. So they didn't have her face. They just had this little graphic. So they broadcast for 2 hours a day. Other than that, they have this website. And what they do is when they're not broadcasting, they have people commenting and they look at Twitter. They mine social media all day long. And then say, okay, the four things that people are interested in, the four things that our audience is interested in are these four, and that's what they do the live broadcast about. So I invite you to watch it and see. They have this wall. I'm so jealous. They have a wall this big that just the Twitters just come down. Everybody Twittering their show while they're doing the show. It's real stupid. I can't see that it's doing anything other than it looks real cool. And I'm like, I wish I had that. Yes.
Doesn't it look less cool, though, when, like, some of the local stations do this little Facebook report, like, well, you know, Joe Blow in Naperville just said,
yeah,
it was a hot day. You know, and I was just like, yeah. Oh, my gosh, you know, I can look at your Facebook.
They're more interactive, so they'll be Skyping with someone. They had a fascinating story about graffiti in some Arabic language in Compton, California. And it was like the people are so interconnected with their country that they would, like, you know, their kids were writing graffiti here and people were getting beaten up back in the home country about the bad graffiti and that. So they had the guy Skyping, they were talking to him. Then they, you know, people can ask questions. So they're trying to be more interactive. I agree. It can be, yeah. Yeah. But what they're doing is they're mining Twitter feed, they're mining this to see, you know, to create this community, and then 2 hours a day they have the live show. Now the thing is they've got this awesome studio in D.C. you can look out their window and see the Capitol, but you could do this with a green screen, or you could do this like in your own study if you had a similar idea. And where they go 2 hours a day, you could go 15 minutes a day about a local news thing, you know, and have the people in, you know, the 36th ward or the 2nd ward write all day if you could get people Twittering and do that, or the people in Naperville. So, again, I'm showing this to you because they're not out yet. I think they're going to come out publicly like May 15th or tomorrow or Monday. But they've been in this soft launch time, so you can watch it and see what it is. But, you know, officially they weren't online yet. But I don't know. It's, what's news going to be in the future? Who knows? I mean, you can watch this and invent it like they are. All right, I want to get to tools before we get to the end of our time. Now, some tools that this thing here I put in, that you can take live stream, which is a video thing that broadcasts live, not like a podcast, but like you're going to do a broadcast, and you can put that inside of Facebook. And there are news people. I think the woman I saw was from South Carolina, and she does a period of her show, maybe an hour or so, she live casts it. And in Facebook, what you see is you would see her show on video, and there'd be a stream where you could type in questions. You as an audience cannot yet video back to her. But so she has her person there saying like, oh, Claudia from, DeKalb County asks this question. So, that's something to look at and experiment with. And that you just download live stream to your computer. It appears to work really easy as long as you have a camera in your computer and you can live stream whenever you want. So that might be neat. I could see somebody doing like a 5-minute recap of your blog or something. Maybe once a week or every couple of days. And I'm just going to, this is what went on my blog today. What do you want me to talk about next week? And people could weigh in on what subject they wanted to do. This social go is a thing that where you set up a social network. Now, my Chicago Talks, I'm having enough time getting the students to write stuff, so I don't really want to have too much discussion going. Also, the college administration would be so weird about that. But like your site, you have a lot of commentary. Monroe has a lot of talking to people. So social go would be if you want to set up a site and your primary thing is to get that kind of interaction with people going.
Okay, well, how would that be different from what I do on Facebook?
Only that you'd have your own site and it wouldn't be in Facebook. So, I don't know that you want to start having ads and monetize it, that you get pissed off at Facebook, that Facebook gets too bad about security stuff. Okay. These three over here, did anybody see the New York Times thing? So now Facebook got so big, it's too big. And there's the phenomenon where if my husband and I want to go out and party, we do not want our nieces and nephews to know what we're doing. And we don't want them to join us and ruin our good time, right? So there are a bunch of apps now for you to set up a really small network. They're limited, no more than 50 people. So I'll show you some of those, but they're like GroupMe is one, Huddle. You can just kind of, actually it was in the New York Times. Go back to the New York Times and look for small things. But Huddle, H-U-D-D-L, Shizzler, S-H-I-Z-Z-L-R, and GroupMe are examples. And what they're nice, they don't have a big registration. So with GroupMe, if you've got people's names or contact on your phone, you just pull them into GroupMe and send them a message. You can send them a picture. You can interact with them. So these would be like you want to go out on a Friday night and people are all down in the loop and you set up a group and say, where are we going to go? And someone will say, oh, let's go to, Miller's or something. What I thought would be an interesting use of some of these, if you had 4 or 5 reporters covering like Brahms, some public thing like his inauguration, you could conceivably set up a small group where you're just talking to one another and say to the photographer, oh, come over here, there's a really great view of Brahms, wife or whatever. Or just in general, coordinate, say, oh, I'm over on this side of Daly Center and the police are doing something bad over here, So you could set up for a small group like that with one of these. And again, it's just like a small network thing, a small Facebook. But that's sort of the new trend now, is to have, instead of having everybody on there. Okay, so this site, if you go to 140one40.com/Dr. Barb, you will see I have some collections of applications that I recommend. So all that I've done is I pull them together and I give my own personal reviews. So it's 140onefort.com/Dr. Barb. And the one that we're looking at is Social Media Starters, but you can look at any of them. And so this is Twitter, Facebook. We've talked a lot about them. They are platforms. LinkedIn. Are you all on LinkedIn? Okay. And increasingly LinkedIn, it was pretty much like a computer kind of an app, but they're moving more and more to the social media kind of thing. And the way I differentiate is the people I know that have like their big funders for Knight or for MacArthur, they're my LinkedIn friends. A student that just graduated, They can be my Facebook friend, but they have to earn to be my LinkedIn friend. I've used LinkedIn contacts to get someone's phone number that's like, you know, you can't get their phone number without knowing someone. So, yeah, it's more valuable. This about me is really cute. Let me show you the about me. If you don't have an online calling card yet, this is my about me. So it's about me, B. Iverson. It has my picture in that. Let's see, can I get it? I don't know if you can see this down at the bottom. It automatically links you to my Twitter stream, my Flickr, my Tumblr, that's my mini blog. And it's got other links. So you set up this one-page thing. This is my photograph that I took, so I don't have to pay any royalties. And it's just a place for you to have on the web where it's like your visual business card. And you can put, all, you know, so if you're a freelancer, you can have your communication. And that's just about.me. Okay, Foursquare is just an example of those geolocating things. Anybody like Trader Vic's? So you get on Foursquare, go to Trader Vic's. The first time you check in, you get that sushi appetizer for free. My family has gone in there serially and cleared them out of that appetizer. But Foursquare is just, you put on your geolocation, you come to a place, you check in, and it's sort of game-like. If you check in the most to your apartment building, you become the mayor of your apartment building. So some people, like in high-rises, get in these big fights about who's the mayor. And then what's happening now is, at first, it was just like a game. Now businesses are saying, hey, if I offer a free appetizer to people, then they will come to my restaurant. And there's other ones like GoWala. These are just called place or location-based social networks. And, you know, as I say, that the advertisers are getting in on them. Now, another really handy thing is this nutshell mail with, now, remember I told you in the beginning that to me, my email is like paper? So with nutshell mail, I can tell it to give me the latest, 10 latest Facebook posts. I can go to my Twitter and set out like what parts of Twitter I want, different social networks. And instead of having to go over to Twitter or go over to Facebook, I can just look at an email. And I can say, send that email to me once a day, twice a day, three times a day. So that's really nice and calming sometimes to just have an email and you go through them and you can say, all right, I saw everything. Feedly is an example of an aggregator of news feeds. And on your phone, you should have one. If you've got an iPad, you can have that flipbook, which is really cool. On my Android, I have a thing called Pulse.net. Now, the difference between like Feedly and Pulse.net and the New York Times is the New York Times shows you the stories, but just from the New York Times. With Pulse.net, I can say what things I want to read. So I read Mashable, I read Engadget, I read Ars Technica, and it brings it in on your phone in a way that you can read it like in the L and the way to work, and people, I can even have my Chicago Talks on there. So what these are, Feedly is an example of a whole class of sort of aggregators where instead of the New York Times saying, here's other stories for you, you say, I want to see the stories aggregated, but you choose where they're coming from. And Feedly works on both your computer and your cell phone. Tumblr is mini blogging or micro blogging. And everybody uses Tumblr now all of a sudden. I don't know, it's sort of faddish. It's T-U-M-B-L-R.
.com.
Yes. This is the site. What's good about Tumblr is it's visual. The other thing, you can have a bar and just post in Tumblr really easy. I think people like it because it's really easy to use. But that's, and it has some nice templates.
And why is it different from a regular blog?
To me, the big difference is, let's see, bookmark bar, this thing here. So when I'm on a page, I can click onto Tumblr. And if I had a video, I just paste in the code. If I have a link, I just paste in the code, a quote, a photo, or text from a site. and it'll up, you know, it, that's how easy it is to post. So I think that's why people like it.
And you can't do that on About Me?
No, About Me is just a single page. You can't, you know, you just write about yourself. But other blogs, it's hard, you know, you have to kind of go into the blog and have more clicks to post. Posterous is a nice one. Anybody use Posterous? If you sent an email right now to post@posterous.com, it'll create a blog for you. Posterous. And you'll be able to get all of these links live if you go to that 140.com/Dr. Barb. But Posterous, when you send that email, it creates a blog. So what would be nice with that was if you were doing a story and you said, I want to hear all the stories about people who like the Chicago River and want to swim in it now that it will be clean, you could put in the address of that Posterous and they'd send their, as they sent emails to you, they would automatically go up and be posted as a blog. Right? Evernote, boy, I'm just running out of stuff. Sorry about that. Evernote, if you're not using Evernote, try Evernote. It's a note-taking that you can have on your computer and on your smartphones, and it syncs the notes between them. And I find it really useful because it will record audio notes on a phone. So if you happen to be somewhere and you're thinking, I can't write that good idea with thumb typing, you can record an audio note and then sync it and listen to it later on your computer. And then geotags are the other things. And you probably have geolocation and geotags. Now, actually, I'm going to show you this site in the beginning so you can see this, because I think this is one of the most important sites. I can stalk you with a you.com. Now, most of us that have some kind of smartphone device, we know that it has GPS, it has global positioning chip in it, right? They have to have that. The government, after 9/11, the government said phones have to have a geolocating thing in them. So what I Can Stalk You does, these are good hackers. But they put up messages that people have put out there that have, it's I-C-A-N-S-T-A-L-K-U, I Can Stalk You. They pull in messages that people are putting out there that are geo-tweeting. So some of these people know that, but as we go through, let's see. Let's look at one person. Mobile home. I sure wish I had more videos to watch. I don't know anyone with an iPad to. All of his tweets that he's putting out there are geotagged. Now, what if he says, gee, I'm so glad. I'm leaving on vacation today and won't be back for 2 weeks. They used to have a site called Rob Me, and they, you know, to make the same point. So I Can Stalk You. And what's this shows where he is, the 4657. That's his geo position, so we can know exactly where he is. In real space, we can find out all these things about him. This will let us tweet him back. If we wanted to, we could like tweet to him and say, Tommy, do you know you're sending all this information? Let's look at a picture that this. A lot of times, our pictures are geotagged. How many of you have a camera that geotags stuff automatically? All right, so that means if you tweet pictures and from your phone, a lot of times they're going up there and people are going to know where you are. As journalists, you want to know that, because what if you're reporting something that, you know, it's like a scoop. So you can usually turn the geo positioning thing off, and you may want to do that. But we can see this guy's, I guess they're at their house or something. All right, now the reason that I tell people about this site too is it's the greatest resource, because it has this. It goes through every kind of smartphone and how you disable the geotagging. Now, I don't think it's like you want to disable it once and leave it off. What you want to be able to do is you want to be in control of when you're sending out your location and when you're not. So a lot of times, you can imagine a story. What if you were doing like a story about a neighborhood and you might have 7 or 8 places and you could imagine your story's going to have a map with it? And you might want to geotag the pictures, because then it'll be really easy to attach them to a map and, you know, have an interactive feature. So that would be good use. But you don't necessarily want to be with somebody, let's say a person that someone is stalking them, and you're interviewing them, and then, you know, you're inadvertently broadcasting their location to their stalker. That would be a difficult situation.
A question, Bob.
Yeah.
Can you use this to stalk, or just to find out, just to turn off stalk?
Just to, you can just see the people. They're pulling in the stream of people that are publicly posting things that have geotags on them. So they're not telling you how to do that. You can look at these people, but you can't find a specific person.
Okay, so let's say
I mean, you probably can't. I don't know how to do that. This site is not for that. This site is for educational purposes of making people aware of what they're doing when they snap a picture and that. But I think it's, you know, you can get a lot of information studying it. And, heck, I think it would be a really good feature, yeah. As a professional, you want to know what you're doing. That's the thing. You want to know it's there. You want to know it can be turned on and off, and you want to be in control of it. Yes?
In my Twitter settings, there's a tweet location, no or yes. Is that the GM?
Yeah, so what you can do on each tweet, and again, I could see using that in a feature. Maybe I'm going on a river tourism, I mean, you know, I want every picture, and I want to tweet my location, but again, I might not want to other times, but that's exactly what it is, and you set that on and off. And I put up this screen to show the different devices, and you can see we have people, as they say, naked. They don't have their devices with. But nowadays, a lot of these social networking tools, it doesn't matter whether you're at your computer or your smartphone or an iPad, or I think there'll be, now they've got Google Chromebooks, which will be out soon, and there'll be all kinds of tablet alternatives to iPods coming out this summer. But, you know, the point is you and all of the people that are engaging with you, reading you, viewing your journalism and that, they'll all be using devices. So most of what I say will be, it'll be something you can use on your computer, and then you can use it on whatever other devices. But, you know, the point is it used to be we were chained to our desks. We are no longer chained to our desks.
You've been listening to a presentation to members of the Chicago Headline Club by Columbia College's Dr. Barbara Iverson. It was part of the club's Digital Media Training Institute, and it was free to members. The Headline Club presents the annual Lissagor Awards for Excellence in Journalism, but the club is much, much more. If you enjoyed this program or found it enlightening, we hope you'll consider joining the CHC. It's membership dues that keep the club functioning. You can find out how to join right here on the Headline Club's website. Thanks for listening.